for U.S. Congress. We are last but not least.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, broadcasting live from New York's Madison Square Garden tonight on day three of the Republican National Convention. Delegates are streaming in right now for the evening's star performers, Democratic Senator Zell Miller of Georgia, Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, Liz Cheney, and Vice President Dick Cheney tonight. The Republicans are clearly enjoying the spotlight this week, feeling their oats in New York. But the Democrats are here, too, and watching from across the country, and they are taking careful notes. The first line of the Kerry campaign's defense is 10 blocks from the Republican convention, where the Democrats are manning a rapid response war room filled with staffers making calls and churning out press releases rebutting Republican claims. In Boston, a month ago, we gave Republicans a mid-convention whack at the Democrats' line of attack. Tonight in New York, we're giving Democrats a chance to fire back at the GOP message. This hour, On Point, we track the Republicans' action on the floor and hear the Democrats strike back. We begin tonight with WBUR and On Point reporter Audie Cornish, who's been around town and talking with GOP delegates today. Audie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So, what are you hearing? How are the Republican faithful enjoying their New York convention so far, Audie?
Well, first of all, they absolutely love New York, and they love the New York police, who have been by their side and very helpful as they walk the streets.
In great numbers and great evidence.
They do, but they have been told to strip some of their paraphernalia just so they don't draw too much attention. People have reported
name calling. That's the delegates not wearing all their badges and all that.
Not a lot of wacky hats here because once you get outside of the arena, because people are trying to keep a low profile so they can enjoy the city.
Though I've seen a remarkable number of interchanges between New Yorkers and delegates. Somehow they find each other out. I've seen lots of impromptu debates on the sidewalks here this week.
There are. It's very interesting. I think that some of the delegates were apprehensive about coming here because they had heard about the activism and because they'd heard they were outnumbered, 5-6 to 1.
But by New Yorkers who are not shy.
Yes, but most of them have said that they have enjoyed their time here. Although I have to stress again, they have such high praise for the New York Police Department.
What kind of highlights of the week do you hear delegates pointing out?
Well, right away, Laura Bush, the First Lady, really, really wowed people. I heard one phrase, someone called her a gutsy, steely lady, a true lady. Someone said that, she's sort of the epitome of the idea that you can get bees with honey, and that her whole demeanor is so excellent that it can convey information without being overbearing or domineering, and that she doesn't try and take over the stage or the spotlight.
Bees with honey, I saw both in Laura Bush and in her daughters last night, that interesting kind of syncopation of comment and then the smile and that sort of little chuckle at themselves even as they
people spoke. Really enjoyed that, and I heard almost in some of their comments more slights towards John Kerry's wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, and people making comments about how the First Lady shouldn't be trying to take over the spotlight and should be clear in her support of her husband, and I think they think that the First Lady exemplifies that.
Tonight we've got Zell Miller and Vice President Cheney Bush coming up tomorrow. What are the delegates looking forward to?
Well, interestingly enough, a lot of the delegates didn't know too much about Zell Miller, but they did say that they were interested in what he had to say because they felt like here's a guy who's going to sell us to other Democrats or to swing voters to say that maybe you don't agree with everything, but the fact of the matter is we have the solutions for the problems right now. And I think I had several delegates say that they're hoping that his presence will indicate to the public that these are special circumstances that the U.S. is facing and that it is important to consider the ideas that are good no matter what party they come from. As for Vice President Dick Cheney, a lot of the delegates I spoke to brought up national security again and again. They seem to be looking to him as the go-to guy for that information and also for him to lay out information about going forward. They say, the last 2 days we've talked about the party in the past, and we're looking to the vice president to give us some idea of where the administration is going forward with national security, homeland security, and some of the foreign policy issues at hand.
Vice President Dick Cheney as the symbol, the icon of that national security face of the Bush administration. Audie Cornish, thanks for covering things inside and out here, inside the hall and outside the hall. Thanks for being with us tonight.
All right, thank you.
Audie Cornish, WBUR, an On Point reporter. We are tuning in tonight from Madison Square Garden to the Democrat response to the Republican convention. We'll be hearing tonight from the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, Terry McAuliffe, and other party stalwarts. If you were in John Kerry's shoes, How would you fire back? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'm joined right now in Madison Square Garden by Harold Meyerson, editor-at-large of the American Prospect magazine, who I'm sure has been watching very closely throughout this week. Harold Meyerson, terrific to have you with us tonight. Thanks so much for joining us.
A pleasure, Tom.
Your thoughts as you sit back and look at this party convention that's still unfolding in front of us. You've seen two nights. You know what's coming tonight. Very likely with Zell Miller, a Democrat who is retiring from the Senate out of Georgia, nothing to lose, and Vice President Cheney, who's not going to run for president, nothing to lose. We could hear some strong attacks. Your thoughts so far about what the Republicans have been dishing up for the country?
Well, I'm struck by the degree to which the convention sort of is coordinated with the swift boat attack of the last month. Every theme here, I think, plays off what the swift boat veterans were trying to do. They were trying to go after John Kerry's character and John Kerry's leadership, and I think that entailed some pretty far-fetched stories on their part. But then you get here to New York, and what is the common theme of the Giuliani, the McCain, the Arnold speeches? They're stressing George Bush's leadership. They're doing it to the exclusion of any discussion, really, thus far, of George Bush's program, and not much discussion of George Bush's record about two crucial issues, the economy and what's going on in Iraq right now. They're quite happy to discuss 9/11, and that's understandable. But they want to get this election down to a character contest in which people accept the swift boat veterans' estimation of John Kerry's character and their own estimation of George W. Bush's.
So you're describing something there like real coordination, or at least full bandwagon jumping upon.
Or the sweetest little coincidence we've ever seen, which I tend not to believe in.
Well, if you follow Bush campaigns, it's clearly not the first time that there's been some real hardball played. John McCain felt the sting of that in Carolina when he ran for president in the primary in 2000, and now John Kerry is seeing it. How big a piece of flesh do you think the whole swift boat veterans attack on John Kerry has taken from the Democratic candidate?
Well, I think it took the whole campaign into a cul-de-sac in the month of August, and it's a cul-de-sac that worked to the benefit of the president, not John Kerry. And John Kerry's challenge at this point is to get the discussion back on where's the economy headed, who's got the best ideas for jobs, for health insurance, and who is more plausible in getting a solution to the quagmire in Iraq.
Harold Meyerson, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Boston. Chris Gregory is joining us. He is a Vietnam veteran and a member of the so-called Dog Hunters, a group of Massachusetts veterans who have been active in John Kerry's political campaign for the past 20 years. Chris Gregory, thanks for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
So you've been watching the campaign of the convention of the Republicans here, and no doubt you've paid a lot of attention with your Vietnam background to the swift boat charges in all of this. How do you see this convention unfolding, how's John Kerry doing in the face of its message?
Well, about John Kerry, I'm not sure. The convention's unfolding in a very scripted way, it seems to me, and without the benefit of too much reality. I'm at a loss to see how it's going to be successful, because it's runs so in opposition to the experience, I think, of the average American, which is that they're no better off than they were 4 years ago. In fact, probably a little worse, and they're embroiled in a war that without a sufficient reason to be there. So, it seems to me that these things are going to come home to roost very soon. This is entertainment and it's a distraction from that, but I don't think the American people are going to be distracted for too long. The other thing I would say about Kerry is that the difficulty with this whole swift boat incident is that these charges, in most cases, it seemed to me, and actually in every case, were such that they really didn't deserve to be dignified by a response, and they were coming from a fringe. Unfortunately, a lot of coverage, free media coverage, was granted these things, and they made a sort of substantial media buy eventually, and we're able to bring it forward. But absent John Kerry's coming forward, I don't think they can be easily rebutted. I mean, if they're a charge to his character, he has to get up and represent his own character, and I think he's very capable of doing it, but I think he did not want to take him too seriously before he had to.
Do you think he was correct in that? John Kerry was at the American Legion in Nashville today, critical of President Bush, but not saying much on this front. Meanwhile, for everybody who's watching the Republican convention, let's say on CNN now and then, those Swift boat ads are still running. Now, not the charges about his Purple Hearts and silver and bronze medal, but now going to his on-the-record testimony before Congress, where he, you know, was very critical of U.S. soldiers' behavior and misbehavior in Vietnam.
I don't want to correct you, but Tom, but he wasn't critical of the soldiers. He was critical of a policy. So he'd never, and he was very scrupulous not to point the finger at individual soldiers. He criticized a policy.
But what Americans are seeing on the air is a very young John Kerry saying they raped, they pillaged, they murdered, you know, and right on with the ferocity of Genghis Khan. Mm-hmm. There was a context for that, granted, but yet that's what people are hearing. Yeah. Do you think John Kerry's responding forcefully enough?
I think he will in the coming days. I think, you know, it was it's always easy to say he didn't do well enough in the beginning, and but I think he did have there was a dilemma. I always also think that, you know, this was the American people will recognize that this was an act of great character what he did in 1971, and opposing and trying to end a war is about as patriotic a thing as you can do. That was the consensus then, and I think it will be again. I think it's unfortunate, you know, you can put up a lot of ugly visions and it makes the man look ugly. He was an angry, vehement protester against the war. And anger never translates into, you know, rarely translates into votes or approval. With absent a context, I think it's tough. The only thing is, I don't think the American people are dumb enough to accept that. H.L. Mencken notwithstanding.
Behind us right now, the formal process of nominating Vice President Dick Cheney is underway. President Bush formally nominated last night. No surprises in either of those. Harold Meyerson, Chris Gregory looks out across what he's seeing here and describes a lot of unreality and says he feels confident that Americans won't buy it. Are you equally confident?
I think if the election turns on the fundamentals of the economy, of the war, then John Kerry's in pretty good shape. And I think if you look at the polling, even though it's moved somewhat towards the president in the last week or so, it's still clear that Americans think the country's headed in the wrong direction, that they don't like the state of the economy, that they question why we're in this war in the first place. If Kerry can move the debate in that direction, as he was able to until about 3 weeks ago, I think the fundamentals favor the Democrats. But if the Republicans are able to make this topic A, B, and C, then it's going to be a real slog.
And this leadership issue, as you say, put front and center and without a lot of adornment on it, without much talk so far about programs or plans or anything else, just strength, leadership, resolution.
Yeah.
How strong, how powerful a message?
Well, I actually think this message is in particular directed at the most embattled of battleground voters, the swingers who really matter the most, whom I would say are white, blue-collar workers and in the industrial Midwest. They certainly culturally might have a greater affinity for George Bush. The George Bush administration has been a disaster for their economy. Both sides are going after these folks hammer and tongs. And I think the leadership thing not only plays well nationally, but is particularly directed at those folks, which is why we saw Mayor Giuliani do that thing about the construction workers, why President Bush is meeting with firefighters here, and why we saw some firefighters a few nights ago on the floor of the screen in the convention.
But you're saying the image of leadership is a substitute for a job or a wage hike?
I'm saying that they are counting on a kind of macho affinity, the anti-girly man, to quote Arnold Schwarzenegger, sentiment, as part of the way George W. Bush reaches out to a critical group of swing voters who happen to be located in some critical states.
Well, that is the message tonight. We are talking in this hour with Democrats, getting their response to the message of the Republican National Convention. The roll call for Dick Cheney goes on the floor below. Later on tonight, of course, he will be at the podium and speaking. We're taking time out tonight to get the Democrats' critique, to let the Democrats strike back. We'll hear soon from Terry McAuliffe at the top of the Democratic National Committee there, joined right now by Harold Meyerson, editor-at-large of the American Prospect, and Chris Gregory, a current advisor to John Kerry. You can join us as well. How solid a case have the Republicans made this week in New York? Where are they strong? Where are they vulnerable? And if you were John Kerry, how would you respond? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook, coming to you live from Madison Square Garden. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, coming to you live from Madison Square Garden, where the Republican National Convention is in its third day. Vice President Dick Cheney, the big speaker tonight. Lynn Cheney speaking as well. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney will take the stage, too. And Georgia Democratic Senator Zell Miller, kind of crossover, renegade Democrat, pariah in that party, now supporting George W. Bush. We're talking tonight about the convention with Democrats who have been watching it, getting their critique, their response. We did the same thing with Republicans a month and change ago in Boston, watching the Democrats. Tonight, it's the Democrats' turn to look at the Republicans. Earlier, I spoke with Terry McAuliffe, chairman of the Democratic National Committee. I asked him what he makes of the Republican convention so far.
Well, as you know, we did our convention all positive, barely mentioned George Bush's name, wanted to give people hope, optimism, plans for the future. I am shocked at the negativity and the meanness already of this convention. Rudy Giuliani spent more time attacking John Kerry than talking about George Bush and what he's going to do for America over the course of the next 4 years. They handed out hundreds of these Band-Aids, made fun of
the Band-Aids Purple Heart. With the Purple Heart on it.
Disgraceful. George Bush ought to come out today and say, stop it. It is just unbelievable. 3,700 Purple Hearts handed out in Iraq. Making fun of these people, I think, of all the military, is a disgrace. These people are so far over the top, mean, negative, mean-spirited. You know what? I think it's going to backfire them. This is not America up here. This is not where Americans are. This is not mainstream America. They are right-wing, ultra-conservatives, and that's not where this country is.
But they are also making a case for George Bush, and I wonder what you make of it. It's centered around strength of leadership, resolution, fortitude, a man who can lead the country in a difficult time, a time of war.
Well, let me just tell you what George Bush, let's use his own words. Forget about what the chairman of the Democratic Party says. Let me tell you what George Bush just said. In 3 days, he said the problems in Iraq first are because of a catastrophic success.
He means the rapid success of the U.S. military forces.
Well, let me tell you what generals tell me, and I was with General McPeak today and yesterday, who led Gulf War I as the head of the Air Force, a general, highly declarated general. He said, first of all, you plan for all contingencies, so it's just bunk to say that it went too fast. What a joke. Then George Bush finally admitted last week that he miscalculated on Iraq. Miscalculated.
The post-invasion strategy.
Miscalculated. And you know what? We're about to have our 1,000th death, unfortunately, and 6,000 people have been wounded. And then in a moment where the man was alone and no one was whispering in his ear, George Bush was asked, can we win the war on terror? His answer was no, we can't win. Then what are 140,000 troops doing in Iraq today? John Kerry, John Edwards, will win the war on terror. I mean, goodness gracious, and then Rudy Giuliani compares him to Winston Churchill. Do you think Winston Churchill said to the Nazis, we can't win? Of course not.
Of course, the next day before the American Legion, George Bush is saying, we will win, we can win.
Yeah,
so what, you're putting the flip-flop tag on the president now?
Because he screwed up.
Terry McAuliffe, pull back from the war, get the bigger picture in here. There's a lot of domestic issues as well.
Yep.
Over these next 4 years, if George Bush goes back and, you know, they're talking about privatizing Social Security, the ownership society. We'll hear more of that from George Bush later this week.
Yep.
What do you make of that? What does the Democratic Party, the Kerry campaign, make of the forward plans, as much as we know of them, of the Bush administration?
Well, I mean, let's see what his plans are. He has not accomplished anything he said he would do 4 years ago when he spoke at their convention 4 years ago. No jobs, underfunded education by $9 billion, 45 million Americans today with no health insurance at all. You know all those issues.
Education, he brought testing into the schools. He said he would, he did.
Let me tell you this. Leave No Child Behind to date, 13 states, including very conservative legislatures like Virginia, have opted out today. 13 today because they said this is an unfunded mandate. You tell us we got to do all this testing, but you don't give us any money. So you know what? They've washed their hands. They said, Mr. President, you keep it. These are Republicans saying this. So none of that has worked. And we know what he wants to get rid of Social Security. And I don't want to do this to scare the seniors who are listening, but we know he wants to eliminate it. Alan Greenspan, as you know, on Saturday said we're going to have to cut benefits.
Well, eliminate. He says he wants to privatize part of it.
But Greenspan said we got to cut benefits. Alan Greenspan on Friday reported Saturday morning every paper in America, we got to cut benefits. These people have paid in their whole life. We have a contract with these seniors. Why are we going to scare, terrorize them, and take their benefits away? So George Bush can give tax cuts to the top 1%? You got to be kidding me.
We saw that little bump in the polls for Bush in the last week. John Kerry had a tough couple of weeks with
character.
The so-called Swift Boat Veterans for
which
Truth.
Which, as you know, now turned out to be lies.
Yeah.
Two of the people have come out and admitted now that it was all hearsay, they were not there. Absolute distortions and lies. Do we need to come out quicker and hit? You bet we do, Tom. We got to go out real quick. But I think from John Kerry, in fairness to John Kerry, He never believed that these people would lie about his military record. These people go out and do it. They did it. We now are prepared. We're not going to let them do it again. But anytime we're not talking about jobs, healthcare, education, we're stuck over here. It's not a place we want to be. We want to be talking about the future and how we're going to get the economy
going. So you saw those punches. You're seeing the message this week at the Republican National Convention. Post-Labor Day, what's the Kerry strategy for victory in November?
John Kerry starts out Friday. He goes to Ohio day one and then just keeps campaigning for the remaining 60 days in battleground states, talking about the issues of relevance to the voters, and keeps on moving and lets us have to fight back if we have to.
Terry McAuliffe, thanks for being with us.
Tom, thank you.
Terry McAuliffe, chairman of the Democratic National Committee. We are hearing the Democrat response to the message of the Republican National Convention tonight. You can join us. What do you think of the Democrat pushback we're hearing tonight? And Republicans, does the Democrat critique have you worried or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. You can hear the convention hall rocking behind us with the music that conventions love, Republican and Democratic. I'm joined tonight by Harold Meyerson, editor-at-large of the American Prospect magazine, and from Boston by Chris Gregory, a current advisor to John Kerry. Harold Meyerson, there's the guy at the top of the Democratic party structure, Terry McAuliffe. What do you think of the pushback there? Is he on the right beam?
I think he is on the right beam. I think that there's no question that this convention has been more in the attack mode than the Democratic. From a somewhat more distance perspective than Chairman McAuliffe, I kind of wish the Democrat convention had done a little more attacking. I think the campaign, if anything, the Kerry campaign spent a lot of time inoculating him. And, of course, the attacks, bogus though they were, came anyway. And not quite enough time on offense. And I think, you know, it's time to get back on offense. But I think the chairman basically made a pretty good case there.
Chris Gregory, the Republicans began their convention, clearly had put the word out for everybody to say they were going to make more of their convention opportunity than the Democrats. They all said, lockstep, the Democrats muffed it. What do you think of that Republican charge, looking back to Boston in that convention?
Well, I don't think it's correct. I think the Boston Convention was very successful in putting out a positive message, and I think it's actually what people want to hear. I don't think that these sort of attempts at character assassination will prevail. They, in the absence of a response, in the absence of John Kerry taking them serious enough to respond to them, I think they get somewhere. But there's still 8 weeks to go. I think the best weapon we have as Democrats is actually personified by John Kerry, and it hasn't been out yet. The thing that Kerry showed me and showed, I think, at least the state of Massachusetts, if not the region, in 96 is when he is directly opposed to his rival, he stands out. The TV camera and the reporters can actually see what this man is made of.
When he's directly opposed, you mean when he's standing at the podium in debate with George Bush 12 feet from him?
Well, I think that begins it. I don't think that's the whole thing. I actually think that dynamic's nearly essential. But I think once they start, it goes back and forth. And that back and forth reveals character in Kerry that I don't think you find in other people. And I certainly don't think you find it in President Bush. So my notion is that dynamic outweighs all others. And if he can get to that point, having put forward a positive message and not being a spoiler, not being mean-spirited, which he's not by nature, I think we're in very, very good shape. And we're getting very close to that point. From now, for the remaining 8 weeks or 9 weeks of the season here, I think that's what he has to do, is engage President Bush very, very closely. He has the energy to do it, he has the discipline to do it, and he has the character to do it, and it'll come out.
Looks like he'd better get to it pretty quickly. The Swift Boat thing's been taking some nip out of him. Let's go to a call. Chantel's calling from Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Chantel. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I'm a veteran at 27 years old. I was a veteran 4 years ago, so at a very young age.
Okay.
Let me just say, to start off with, I wouldn't have voted for John Kerry. I'm kind of in the mode of anybody but Bush. My choice would have been somebody way left in the Democratic Party, like Dennis Kucinich and Wesley Clark for, you know, the Southern vote.
Okay.
But I feel like this convention is really doing a good job in sort of flinging mud. And I called the Kerry campaign this morning and said, you all need to do something, because all I see, even in Alaska, is a Swift boat ad. And my understanding was that when he was testifying, he was taking, you know, what the quotes that they're using from what he heard other people saying. So they're doing, I think Republicans are much better than Democrats. The Democratic convention was sort of ho-hummy and kind of, you know, relatively optimistic, and the Republicans are just flat out, you know, destroying this man's character. And I can't believe that the Kerry campaign is sort of standing there, and if it were me, I would say, well, at least Kerry went. He didn't hide behind my father's CIA director, and I'm, you know, from a wealthy Connecticut family, and he didn't hide behind that, and he went, and George Bush didn't, and I think the Democrats, unfortunately, are not doing a good job in responding.
Chantel, let me ask you, though, think back to that Democratic convention. You say, ho-hummy. I mean, remember the night Bill Clinton spoke? People were just, they were ecstatic. Remember Barack Obama?
Right.
People were on their feet and couldn't sit down.
But I'm thinking the message in the Democratic Party was optimism, and we're not going to sort of, you know, lower ourselves to that level. And I think, unfortunately, the country is so divided now that there are those of us on the left who read books, about the hunting of the president, and we read Michael Moore and Noam Chomsky, and, you know, so we're sort of revved up in that, but the Democrats are playing more to the center, and they're forgetting about us on the left, and Ralph Nader got a huge chunk of the Alaska vote last time, I think about 10% to 15%, and so I'm thinking if Kerry doesn't start saying something, it drives me crazy for me
Chantel,
to hear.
Chantel, we've got it loud and clear from Anchorage, and thank you so much for calling in. I want to go down to the floor right now just for a moment where Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao is at the microphone.
The love vote. But it brought us to this magical country and reunited our family. So it was beautiful to me.
Secretary Chao, Chinese-American, speaking
first,
of her own family's immigration journey to the United States.
Were difficult obstacles for us to overcome. And one evening, shortly after moving into a small one-bedroom apartment in Queens, we were surprised by the doorbell. Nobody knew us, so we wondered who could be at our door. And when we opened the door, we were startled by the sight of a mob of people in disguise, pushing bags in our faces while chanting something that we couldn't understand. We thought we were being held up. Terrified, we emptied our cupboards and gave them all of our food. And that was our first introduction to Halloween.
Elaine Chao with the terror of an immigrant family's Halloween night experience. Harold Meyerson, it goes on. Arnold Schwarzenegger with his long recitation of his own immigrant story, Elaine Chao tonight. Lots of very deliberate outreach. Interesting, not as many high-profile speakers. It focuses attention in on those that they want the focus on. How do you see it unplaying?
Well, first of all, I just have to say it's an inspiring sight to see Elaine Chao come here as having come as an immigrant from Taiwan, I think, and you know, rising
Taiwan
to the level that she can deprive 8 million Americans of overtime pay. So I'm compelled to say that at the outset. But, no, they are targeting the convention is actually an interesting display of targeting distinct groups, and certainly they've been targeting what they regard as swing immigrant groups, of whom the largest is some percentage of Hispanics, and nobody knows quite how many, but I think it's pretty clear that they're going to be overwhelmingly for the Democrats this year. It just depends on how overwhelmingly. Some targeting of Orthodox Jews. I mean, there's all kinds of messages within messages here. But then you're right. Some of the more prominent members of the Bush cabinet are nowhere to be found here. Donald Rumsfeld would suggest, make people think about the war in Iraq, which they don't want people to do. So Donald Rumsfeld is nowhere to be found here. He has disappeared for the duration of this convention.
And I haven't seen John Ashcroft either, unless I've missed him.
No,
I have not seen him.
No, the people identified with the most prominent policies of this administration are not here, and I think that's very telling.
Chris Gregory, you described the image of the country, of the world that the GOP is putting forward as loaded with unreality. Flesh out that picture for us. What do you mean by that?
Well, the notion, I understand Mrs. Cheney is going to talk about the success in education that we've experienced in the last 4 years, but I don't think that this is spoken by anybody who's trying to put kids through school. The reality is education, at least post-secondary education, has become nearly unreachable, and it's escalated dramatically in the last 4 years. It impoverishes families to try to send one or two kids to college. The secondary education is no better. I mean, if you talk to parents, there's a great deal of anxiety about how well our children are being prepared for future life. Now, the economy speaks for itself. I mean, the numbers that Chairman McAuliffe talked about are astonishing. This country is not doing well. And all the happy talk in the world is not going to convince the people of Ohio that that's the case. I think that this race is going to be won or lost on the amount of energy that the Democratic Party loyalists are going to be able to put into it. And it's going to be won in neighborhoods of Akron and Cleveland and Cincinnati and in other similar places. And if those people, it seems to me, are energized beyond what they have been previously, because there are hard times around, and there's no escaping it.
And so, maybe beyond the theater of any convention, maybe not. Let's turn to a call. Kathy's calling from Pigeon Falls, Wisconsin. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hello. If I were John Kerry, and I'd like to see it on the TV tonight, if not sooner, I would make an ad that said, yes, I may have gone a little far. I've apologized for my testimony talking about atrocities in Vietnam. But somehow in a genteel way refer to the fact that while he was doing that and worrying about the war at 20-something, his counterpart was out doing cocaine and drinking and didn't really come into his own until he was 40. And then I'd say, you know, now we find ourselves in a similar war with similar bad policies. Elect me so we can get it straightened out.
So you say, John Kerry, get down and dirty here.
That's right.
Kathy, we've got it. And Harold Meyerson, you laugh, but you know this is not the first place we hear this. People saying, John Kerry, come on, roll those shirt sleeves up and fight.
Right. Well, that's the question. And the question that the campaign has been debating is how to do it. And I think they certainly need to be vehement in defense of his own record, his own life, his own honor, and vehement on the policy differences, because I think the American people are more with him than with the Bush administration on issues of what to do with the economy, Social Security, and what have you. In terms of going after the president, I think you go after his record. When he was... The press, I think, is the entity which has not done enough digging on the young and irresponsible part of George Bush. I mean, we can't have the equivalent of swift boat veterans for George Bush, because nobody saw him when he was in Alabama. It's not like he's got his crewmates and then other crewmates. He was just the invisible man as far as the international
guard. That climaxed 6 months ago. Now, when we're in the home stretch, that story is considered history, old news.
Well, I mean, some might think that the Kerry allegations from the Swift Boat veterans climaxed, in the 1996 or 88 or previous elections, too, since they didn't really bring up any credible new material. A lot of this stuff is simply raised, and the news media either runs with it or it doesn't.
Well, there we are. The convention proceedings go on the floor at Madison Square Garden tonight. We are giving Democrats a chance to respond. What they're hearing tonight and all this week. We did the same for Republicans in Boston at the Democrat convention a month ago. Tonight, it's the Democrats' turn to take a whack. You can join this conversation. How solid a case have the Republicans made this week in New York? Where are they strong? Where are they weak? And how is it that two parties on the same little planet put forward such two different views of the world? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll hear more from the convention hall, more from the Democrats when we come back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
America's workers.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, coming to you live from Madison Square Garden. We're letting the Democrats tonight respond to the message of the Republican National Convention. Right now at the podium in the hall, Representative Rob Portman of Ohio. Let's listen for a moment.
A blue state or a red state or a swing state like Ohio, each and every one of us must do our part to keep George Bush in the White House for four more years. Four years.
And there's the message from the convention floor. We are joined right now from Massachusetts by
all.
Congressman Barney Frank, very prominent Democrat and Massachusetts representative. Barney Frank, thanks for joining us tonight. What do you make of the Republican convention so far?
Well, it's predictable, but I don't say that critically. So is the Democratic convention. People have lamented the fact that the conventions don't make decisions anymore, but that's a result of democratization. People sometimes forget how things were brought about, but you go back to 1968 when there was a lot of anger on the Democratic side that a party where a majority of the people seemed to be very critical of the war in Vietnam wound up with a presidential candidate, Hubert Humphrey, who was at least somewhat supportive, although I think he wished he didn't have to be. And as a result, we changed the rules, and the presidential candidates are now selected in what is really the most open participatory process in the world. I mean, you know, Tony Blair and Jacques Chirac don't go to the Iowa caucuses or the New Hampshire primary. As a result, the convention is somewhat vestigial in that it is no longer the decision maker, but it still has an important function. We have national parties, but we're a pretty far-flung country. And it is useful at least once every 4 years for the people who have this common membership in this important political institution, a national party, to come together, talk to each other, and cheer each other on. But it's largely a pep rally.
So it's a pep rally, and that upsets journalists sometimes, but it seems to me that people, voters paying attention, find a lot to be interested in some of these speeches.
Well, it tends to reinforce the voters. I will have to say that, you know, the fact that it upsets journalists from the standpoint of those of us in politics, we don't do things just to upset journalists, but if, in fact, what we do upsets them, that's kind of like an extra.
Good for you. But so forget about it as a decision-making place.
No,
I think a lot of people have written
that
up. As
that you send.
Exactly.
Let me say, it's interesting. You can read it. Yeah. I read the Republican Convention as an understanding by the Republicans of their dilemma, and it's one that Democrats used to have. They have it more now. And that is, what happens when your driving force within your party is a group of people who are fairly extreme in their views, and whose views are probably not acceptable to the electoral majority. And this is when a party gets in trouble. That is, when what you have to do to appeal to your own most intense partisans will drive away the people you need to win the election. So the way the Republicans have done it is really quite clever. I think it's kind of bait and switch. Public policy under the Republicans is dictated by Rick Santorum, Tom DeLay, John Ashcroft, Paul Wolfowitz, a very, very right-wing group of people. But when they get their chance now to kind of put on a public face, they downgrade those people, and instead they put on the people who are the most moderate. The problem, of course, is from the objective standpoint, the moderates don't have a lot of influence. If you look at those issues where Giuliani or Schwarzenegger or McCain differ with the Republican position, they're not issues where they have any influence whatsoever. But they're apparently willing to be used in this way. And so what you have in this convention is a kind of massive bait-and-switch operation.
Or a lipstick on an elephant, as I heard a wag saying somewhere. But still, there's a presentation going on here. There's a face being put forward. They may have to cover some tensions and spectrum within their own party. But how effective a face do you think this is? It's not going to take much to sway this vote.
I don't know yet. And look, I am myself so committed on the issues, and I have to be honest, I have trouble understanding how an intelligent and thoughtful person who has any set of kind of well-developed views about public policy could be undecided today. You know, I can understand being undecided, frankly, between Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter. They were not sharply opposed, but on most public policy issues, the differences between John Kerry and George Bush are so sharp, I don't understand what leads people to be undecided, so I guess I'm not the best judge about how to influence them. I will say this. I am somewhat encouraged, frankly, as a critic of what I think is a kind of a masquerade here, that some of those on the moderate Republican side finally appear to be saying, well, wait a minute, we're not just going to keep going along. What's interesting in American politics has been that the conservative Democrats, I think the former conservative Democrats have had more intellectual integrity than the liberal Republicans. That is, a lot of people who were in the Democratic Party and found that their conservatism really made them unhappy had the intellectual integrity to switch and become Republicans. You have a lot of people who describe themselves as moderate Republicans who moan about the right-wing takeover but continue to make themselves available. They're enablers of that right-wing takeover, with very few exceptions, like Senator Jim Jeffords. I am encouraged, for instance, the log cabin Republicans. I have been critical of them in the past, the gay Republicans.
Right.
But they're showing some real integrity now. And they are saying, I think, that, well, look, you can't just throw us this kind of a purely rhetorical bone and have the public policy be totally against us. And that's the question I'm most interested in seeing the answer to.
Barney Frank, it's great having you tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Barney Frank, Massachusetts Congressman. We're talking tonight with Democrats about their response to the Republican National Convention. We did the same thing at the Democratic Convention a month ago, talking to Republicans. And then, as now, we're going to invite in a kind of defending voice here as well. We're joined at Madison Square Garden by Matt Continetti. He's a staff writer for the conservative Weekly Standard. He spent some time with us in Boston. He's back with us in New York. Matt, good to have you.
Thanks.
So you hear Barney Frank there saying, look, he's so focused on the issues, it's hard for him to understand how anyone could still be swinging. But it looks to me like the Republicans are swinging for swing voters at this convention. How do you think they're doing?
I think the dilemma facing the Bush campaign going into this convention is, are we running a typical reelection campaign that is based on our incumbent president's record, or are we running almost a challenger campaign where we're contrasting our candidate with that of the opposing team?
What do you see?
Well, I see a mixed message, to be honest. I see, look at Rudy Giuliani's speech, for example, which went everywhere. Not only did you have the great line about John Edwards needs his two Americas so that Kerry can vote in each one, right? But you also have talking about trying to link Bush and his war leadership with Winston Churchill and Abraham Lincoln. So, I mean, there's a danger that the message will come across as muddled, but there's also a chance that people are going to read both messages. They're going to reject Kerry, and they're also going to embrace Bush.
We're hearing tonight from Harold Meyerson, from Chris Gregory, this charge of unreality in the picture of the country, of the world that the Republicans are putting up tonight. Your publication has sort of written a lot of the screenplay of that reality. Do you see unreality on display here?
Not really unreality. I mean, what I'm seeing here is a championing of Bush as a war president, which he is. And what I'm also seeing is an attack on John Kerry's record, which is perfectly acceptable in American politics. It's negative politics. It was funny, Terry McAuliffe was on the show earlier, and he said, oh, the Republicans are being so nasty and mean. And then he turned around, and he spent the next 7 minutes attacking George W. Bush. And the fact is, I think partisans like to complain about negativity, but at the end of the day, we all embrace it.
Let's hear from our callers. Jim is calling from Climax, North Carolina. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call tonight.
Good to have you, Jim.
I have two statements to make. One is on, let me say this. I am a registered Republican. I am a Vietnam veteran, disabled, and I was in Vietnam at the same time Mr. Kerry was there.
All right.
I would like to say this on that. I am very sick of the Republican Party slamming Kerry with the record of Cheney and Bush and Vietnam. At least Kerry was there. Those two hid and were not there. End of that story. Number two, Bush is talking about he pushed through this prescription drug bill. My AAA motorist card gives me a bigger discount than Bush's Medicare card gives me. Now, I will listen to your response to that after I go off the air, but I am a very disgruntled Republican, so label me a liberal Democrat.
Jim, we've got it loud and clear from Climax. Chris Gregory, there's a fellow Vietnam veteran of yours who has been straight put off by the Swift boat critique.
Well, I'm not sure. He's been put off by a couple of things. I think he's been put off by reality, by the reality of what he has to pay for prescription drugs, and by the reality of the fact that George W. Bush has done nothing to help him with that, other than make promises and take credit for stuff that he has really had no business taking credit for. So I think that's just reality coming back to bite him.
Harold Meyerson, you hear in this caller a kind of fierceness. You hear from the floor of the Republican convention a kind of fierceness, ready to attack from the first night right on, and no doubt we will hear more of that tonight. Do the Democrats have that fierceness in them in the fight? Does it take that to win? Can they muster it? Will they?
Oh, I think the Democrats are mobilized this year as never before. I mean, how this translates out into the substance of commercials is one thing. But in terms of the commitment of the Democrats and the genuine deep dislike and distrust of George W. Bush, I've not really seen anything like this. And I've been around Democratic politics since I was a teenager in the 1960s. This is really without modern precedent, the depth of Democratic feeling about this election.
But you yourself said, in retrospect, you wish there had been a little more two-fisted critique of George Bush at the Democratic convention. Whatever the depth of feeling, are the Democrats being effective in translating that into a national message that's fiery enough?
I think the national message of the last 2 months, which had better be fiery enough, is going to be focusing on the economy and the war. And if the Republicans keep coming after John Kerry's service record with a lot of fabricated nonsense, then really indignation on that. I think they need to step up to the plate a little bit like Chris Gregory. I think John Kerry's done that before, and I think he'll do it again.
Patrick is calling from Menominee, Wisconsin. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen. I was just wondering if there was ever going to be a response by the Democratic Party to the abuse, the 9/11 tragedy by the Republican Party, and how they seem to beat us over the head with it. It seems a lot like a doctor who rips open your stitches to show you how much you need it. And I'm really getting sick of hearing every time a Republican opens their mouths about 9/11.
9/11 was a big deal. Do you think it's wrong for the president who was sitting during that tragedy and who governed through it to refer to it at his party's convention?
I think referring to it is one thing, and repeatedly bringing it up as he did something well is sort of misleading. We responded to something in a way that many people didn't even agree with.
Yep, we've got it, Patrick. Thanks for calling in. Matt Cottinetti, how about it? Do you think, from your conservative perch, that the Republican Party has abused the 9/11 legacy, the 9/11 tragedy this week?
I would say not. I mean, I saw the presentation by the some of the 9/11 widows and relatives last night. I thought it was very respectful, very heartfelt, very moving. I mean, look, I mean, there's no way you can get around 9/11. It's a hinge point in our politics. It's the reason why, more than anything, I believe, Zell Miller is going to be addressing the convention tonight. It's the reason why Ron Silver, the liberal Democrat, is supporting President Bush. And by the same token, the Iraq War is why many Republicans are moving to John Kerry. So what 9/11 did was open a hinge in our nation's history, and this is a very big moment, and no one should hide from that.
Chris Gregory, let's look ahead. We've just got a couple of minutes left here. The Republicans are talking about coming out of this convention with a lot of momentum. There was movement toward Bush in the polls. Slight, still neck and neck, but noticeable before this convention. What do you see on the path ahead?
Well, I don't think that they will. I don't think that there will be a tremendous advance by the Republicans. As Barney Frank said, I don't see that there are enough undecideds to be able to really garner much of a lead, no matter what they said. So I think that's a kind of false hope. I do also think that to the extent that they try to push Kerry down, it just makes more inevitable the confrontation between Bush and Kerry, and it makes it more dramatic, which I think accrues to my man, because he's much more capable in that kind of environment. And I think the contrast between Bush and Kerry will come down to not these politics, will come down to who is the better man, which you can actually see when you're on who is the better man and who wants the job more. You can see that on the television camera. You can see that on the stage. And I believe that will accrue to us.
Harold Meyerson, final thought. We've just got half a minute here. Are you equally confident? Are the Democrats in the position, after all we've seen in the last month, after this convention, to come out and take this race?
I think the fundamentals basically cut in the Democrats' favor. And so long as they keep the focus on that, so long as they build off the fact that most American people do want a change in direction and just need to feel comfortable with John Kerry, and I think Kerry goes out, as Chris Gregory said, and does his thing, and I think he will be a persuasive advocate for himself in the debates, I think the Democrats will prevail if they keep on that message, if they can keep the dialogue on that message.
Well, there is a real fight to be had here. Harold Meyerson, editor-at-large of the American Prospect, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Chris Gregory in Boston, advisor to John Kerry, thanks so much for being along.
Thank you. It's wonderful.
And with us here in Madison Square Garden, Matt Cottinetti, staff writer at the Weekly Standard. Good to have you back, Matt.
Great to be here.
So right now on the floor at the Republican National Convention, Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. There is more to come. There will be more tomorrow. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.